The deaths of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and Philando Castile in Falcon Heights, Minnesota, were both captured on video. So are the deaths of Walter Scott, Eric Garner, so many others. That's not new. Back in 1991, Rodney King's beating was captured by video camera from a balcony, an early use of recording gear to capture police brutality. Since then, of course, the technology has gotten better, and so have bystanders at using it. In Baton Rouge last Tuesday, members of an organization called Stop the Killing reportedly heard of Sterling's encounter with the cops on a police scanner and went to the scene. Stop the Killing produces documentaries to expose street violence of all kinds, and it didn't go with the intention of immediately posting the footage, preferring to wait to see how transparent the police would be.
So they're saying, well, we have video, we have body cameras, we have everything that we need to do a thorough investigation.
That Stop the Killing founder Arthur Reed, a former gang member turned activist, also known as Silky Slim on NPR.
Then the next day they come out and say, well, the body cameras fell off the officers, so we don't have that video. And then they didn't produce the store surveillance footage, so that let us know that we needed to release what we had nationally.
We keep those images out there of what we're doing to ourselves, as well as what the police are doing to us, he told the New York Times. We don't think you can look at one without looking at the other. On Wednesday in Falcon Heights, Minnesota, the source of the recording was closer to the victim than perhaps ever before, when moments after police shot Philando Castile during a traffic stop, his partner, Diamond Reynolds, began streaming his death on Facebook Live.
Stay with me. We got pulled over for a busted tail light in the back. And the police just, he's covered. They killed my boyfriend.
And then in the back of the police car, she turned the lens on herself and expressed her horror with harrowing intimacy.
My phone is about to die. They shot him. He shot him 3 times because we had a busted taillight. He asked them for license and registration. He told them that man that it was in his wallet, but he had a pistol on him because he's licensed to carry. And the officer told him, don't move. And as he was putting his hands back up, the officer shot him in his arm about 4 or 5 times. Please, Lord. Y'all, please pray for us, Jesus. Please, y'all. I ask everybody on Facebook, everybody that's watching, everybody that's tuned in, please pray for us. Sister, I know I just dropped you off, but I need to be picked up. I need Alize to call my phone.
A few hours and more than 1 million views later, the video vanished from Facebook, prompting global outcry. Facebook called it a technical glitch. About an hour later, the video was restored and labeled disturbing, requiring users to click on the video in order to watch it. When Facebook Live first launched in April, Mark Zuckerberg said it would, quote, create new opportunities for people to come together. And so it has. Philando Castile died in front of an audience. And so did the police officers in Dallas on Thursday through Michael Kevin Bautista's Facebook Live stream, now viewed more than 5.6 million times. It's a uniquely 21st century way of coming together. In a post Friday, Facebook reflected on the role of its live video feature, quote, just as it gives us a window into the best moments in people's lives, it can also let us bear witness to the worst. Live video can be a powerful tool in a crisis to document events or ask for help. Obviously, video alone cannot generate protests, build movements, lead to investigations, indictments, or policy changes. Video is just a tool. More effective when used well. So, we offer you a piece we put together last summer after another wave of deadly police encounters on how to film the police wisely and within your rights. The Breaking News Consumer's Handbook, Bearing Witness Edition.
The number one rule is learn to hold the camera. It boils down to holding the camera in a horizontal manner. Just turn the phone sideways because then you'll record video in landscape mode.
Journalist Carlos Miller founded the blog Photography is Not a Crime in 2007 to document his own trial for filming police while on assignment. Now it's a news site focusing on the right to record police misconduct nationwide.
Learn how to edit videos, because a lot of times people put videos up that are 15 minutes long and you're seeing the sky, sidewalk, trees, and then suddenly maybe 13 minutes into the video, the main thing happens. So why didn't just delete this first 13 minutes if it's not really moving the story forward? The shorter the video, the more viral it will go.
More important, keep your cell phone charged. And most important,
keep your mouth shut. I say that because I've seen so many videos over the years where people are recording an incident of police abuse. And the person who's recording, they're outraged and they're angry.
Yo, that's your badge! Oh, shit!
And what happens is their mouth is very close to the microphone. So when we're looking at this video, all we do is hear this person screaming and yelling, and we can't hear what's actually going on with the incident.
Ideally, a civilian recording a police officer should be a fly on the wall. Certainly present, but not particularly noticeable.
Seth Stoughton was a Tallahassee policeman for 5 years. Now he teaches at the University of South Carolina School of Law.
This is to the benefit not just of the officer who can handle the scene, do his job or her job the way they feel it needs to be done at the moment, but also to the benefit of the civilian who is doing the recording. The less intrusive they are, the better recording will be, and also the better their personal outcome will be. They are unlikely to be approached, accosted, or arrested by an officer.
Because officers have the right to tell you to back away if you obstruct them. They also have the right to eject you from private property, like a mall. You could even be arrested. Plus, a little distance improves the evidence. A prime example, says Stoughton, is that indicting video of the death of Walter Scott.
It was far enough away from the events that viewers could get some idea about what the entire scene looked like. They could tell that there was no crowd around, for example, no imminent threat to the public. A very close shot wouldn't have captured that information. It was close enough that we could hear the audio, not all of the audio. I would have loved to hear, for example, what the officers were talking about as they somewhat half-heartedly tended to Walter Scott as he lay on the ground after the shooting. But it captured the most relevant portions of the audio.
Something I should have established earlier. It is legal to film police interactions, is it not?
Yes. Every appellate court that I'm aware of at the state or federal level has indicated that there is a First Amendment right to film police interactions in public. So it is legal with some limits. There are certain activities that someone will not be able to film.
But interactions with the public?
A traffic stop, a pedestrian stop, a stop and frisk, those sort of normal interactions, yes, are subject to filming.
What do you say to a police officer who tells you to stop when you are legally and not obstructively filming their interactions?
It's a situation that I think calls for significant caution. I would urge people to be aware not just of their right to film, but also any relevant case law, that is the name of the case that allows them to film in their jurisdiction. For example, if I'm in Michigan, it's awfully nice if I can say, "Officer, I appreciate that, and I will respect your authority and stay at a safe distance, but the case X versus Y gives me the right to film you in public."
I'm sure that's great advice. It also is really frustrating to hear that kind of thing, because you shouldn't have to be able to cite case law to be able to do something that's protected by the First Amendment of the United States.
Jennifer Carnig is former communications director for the New York Civil Liberties Union, which has developed an app that's now being used by affiliates nationally to safeguard civilian video.
It will film whatever you are pointing your phone toward, and then when you stop recording, the video goes directly to us. So that's kind of one of the cool things about it, is it's impossible then for somebody or a police officer to take your phone and delete the video, because it's already going to be with us. So you kind of have a backup.
So just by stopping it, or do you have to give it a shake?
Depends what you're using. If you have an Android phone, you just shake your phone and that stops it and it sends it to us. If you have an iPhone, you actually have to go in and hit the stop recording button. But the video, as soon as you stop recording, comes to us automatically.
She says she's received tens of thousands of submissions, none so far actionable, but that's not the point. The point is to open the eyes of people unfamiliar with policing in Black and Latino neighborhoods, to show that stop and frisk is not a polite encounter, that it may involve being manhandled, thrown against a wall.
It forces people to actually have to confront this idea that the people that are supposed to protect and serve us don't always do that.
The value of videotaping police is not just holding officers accountable for misconduct, although that is certainly important. It also gives us an opportunity to record officers doing a good job.
And Seth Stoughton cites that infamous video of that officer run amok at the Texas pool party.
About second 50, we see a police officer who's interacting with a group of young Black men very calmly. He is listening and engaged with them as they try and tell him who was or was not involved in an incident earlier. And he responds to their concerns by saying,
"Okay, guys, I appreciate it.
None of them were involved.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
It's a very professional, positive interaction. Having that on film is useful because it gives us a contrast to the actions of the other officer.
You know, as somebody who just follows this kind of thing in the media, I get the impression that no policeman ever wants to be filmed and will always object. Tell me I'm wrong.
I would like to. I can't think of too many people who do like being filmed when they're at work. There are certainly officers, though, who have recognized that they are not just representatives of their agency, but really representatives of the law, of government generally. I'm not saying that they should all be eager to be videotaped, but I don't think they should shy away from it or be defensive. If they want to inform people about what good policing is, then they should certainly be willing, if not embrace, the opportunity to do it on camera.
Hell, I wouldn't want to be filmed at work. Who would? But if you're a cop, increasingly it comes with the territory. And he's right about there being representatives of the law, because ultimately, that's where those lenses are fixed. On the cops, the courts, the judges, the whole justice system, they're all being filmed at work. Because the stakes are immeasurable. And the camera never blinks. You can find the ACLU apps and our Breaking News Consumer Handbook, Bearing Witness Edition, on our website, onthemedia.org.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.